I was at the Obama Presidential Library opening, and it was an absolutely absurd experience, an amazing experience. So in Chicago, Obama's opening his own presidential library on a strip of land with a basketball court, a museum in it, all of these different things. And the opening is honestly unlike anything I've ever seen. So Obama was on stage with his wife. Bill and Hillary Clinton were there. Former President Barack Obama, Biden and Jill Biden were there. And then Bush and his wife were there. So it was all of these giants were on stage. And then in the crowd, I saw people like Stephen Colbert. I know Oprah Winfrey was there.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Stephen Miller.
Really? Yeah, Stephen Miller and Kash Patel were sleeping over on the side of the road. No. It was just a bunch of celebrities, and it was really cool to meet everybody. And Obama gave this great speech about institutions and democracy and equality. And it was, for a moment, a return back to what America used to be like, because he was talking about the beauty of having institutions that protect everybody and create social harmony. So it was great.
You mean instead of dividing us and helping to protect people like Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, instead of posting AI memes of Obama depicted as like some sort of animal, rather than calling people slurs like Donald Trump does on Truth Social, he called Tim Walz.
Or going off and calling Michelle Obama a man, you know, on national TV in front of the White House. It's just disgusting. Could you imagine if somebody said that about Melania in that same set? Like, and Fox News would be talking about it for the next 10 years.
And you know what really trips me up about it is like, people like you and I pay attention to politics a lot, so we know that this stuff is wrong. But imagine all of the young men out there who don't really have role models, and you're supposed to be able to look to the president as a role model, like Obama would be a great role model, but they look up to the highest echelons of power, and there's Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, Elon Musk. Who are young men in America supposed to look up to? So it was nice to see this return to normalcy and like, you know, a normal family, Obama giving a normal speech. It was so nice.
Yeah, instead of 2 hours of rambling that doesn't make any sense.
He did not once deny that an election had proper results, which was so refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, what the only thing that really gives me any real sense of hope is the fact that our generation is going to outlive Donald Trump and a lot of the people that got us into this mess. But what keeps me up at night is, what are we going to do to actually get out of it? And thankfully, I think a lot of our candidates, leaders we deserve, are helping with that. One of them, Bryce Perry, just, you know, helped to lead the fight against the attempted redistricting effort in Georgia. And he got hundreds of people to show up and testify and organize town halls. And they successfully pushed off the Georgia state legislature's redistricting efforts, similar to what just happened in Tennessee. Except in this case, the Democrats there succeeded and prevented the redistricting, at least until they do another special session in December.
That is amazing. And this is a young guy?
Yeah, his name's Bryce Perry. He was the head of the Young Dems of Georgia.
And then in
2024, he was elected at 23 years old. And in Georgia, we now have 5 young people that are going to be headed to the state legislature this cycle. And it's so, I don't know what the hell's going on in the Atlanta Metro and Gwinnett County, like, or what's in the water there, but it is a young candidate talent factory. It is crazy.
Well, thanks to the work that you do as well. So good work there. Can I just say, the older generation, they're not ready for the way these younger operators move. You know what I've realized is that most of the older folks play by a set of rules that are just gone. Donald Trump is unique. He plays by basically no set of rules. But whenever I go on these shows, and we'll talk about Scott Jennings in a minute, but broadly when I go on these shows, I feel like the older folks were taught these rules. Like, you need to sit up straight, keep your hands on your lap, and speak very slowly. But we play by none of those rules. I'll talk fast. I will make sure that I ask the question again. I'm not going to move on to the next segment if you lie. And none of these older folks, not to make it, you know, an age division, but none of them are really ready for what the younger generation has. So when you tell me about these political operatives in Atlanta who are just absolutely cooking, I feel like we're going to outmaneuver this due to our formative years being shaped by Trump being an absolute asshole all of the time. And now we understand, okay, if the Republican Party isn't going to play by any rules, why should we? Why can't we use this lack of rules to rebuild our democracy?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest problems that our party has is acting like it's the 1990s still.
Yeah.
It's not. You know, our candidate, one of our candidates in Georgia, who was the youngest person ever elected, who won by 153 votes, Akbar Ali, after Trump's disastrous war with Iran started and gas prices skyrocketed, he went to the Democrats and said, hey, let's go and try to push the governor to suspend the gas tax in the state. And originally, a lot of the Democrats were like, no, that just can't happen. It's unrealistic. You don't understand how things happen here. So he said, screw it. And he added it in as an amendment to a bill so that Republicans would be forced to vote against it. And they actually were like, well, we can't vote against that. And then the governor signed it into law. And because of him not being fed into that jadedness, yeah. It proved how even where, you know, we're not, even where we're in the minority, because he doesn't have that jadedness and acceptance of the status quo, he was able to save Georgia drivers $200 million over the past 2 months by suspending the gas tax there and showing that Democrats actually are working on affordability and achieving real results and not just writing strongly worded letters in the first place. That's yes. What's really, I mean, we also have people like Zohran out there who, you know, are the envy of the country. And a lot of, I'm sure you hear this a lot, Adam, from older people who say, one of the questions I get most is, you know, young people just don't care about democracy, David. How do we make them care about democracy? And they, I think they expect some kind of West Wing soliloquy from me about the founding fathers and, you know, like the Constitution and something like that. And it's not that complicated or beautiful. It's give them people that they actually want to vote for in the first place, that they're excited to vote for. And not just because the opponent sucks, but because the candidate that Democrats provide is truly great. That's what I think that we need to do to help, you know, protect democracy, is give young people somebody to actually believe in the first place. But I'm curious, like, what do you think if you were in charge of the House Democrats, what would you do right now in terms of what would your first thing do? You know, if you were in Hakeem Jeffries' shoes, let's say theoretically he's speaker next year, what would you do on day one?
That's a really good question. Like, to answer right off the bat, when you bring up Zohran, it makes me remember this quote where if you look at the rule book that exists, you can flip it over and find a map on the back. So if we look at the rules that Democrats have been playing by, we can flip that on its head and find a map of what we need to do. So what we need to do is restore our democracy by being as relentless and aggressive as the Republicans are, but in a pro-democracy manner. I would immediately change the way Democrats communicate to be more aggressive, to gain more attention in the attention economy, and then use that attention to drive a narrative to some sort of point, like redistricting or the midterms or Trump rigging the elections. For example, Governor Gavin Newsom, he was doing Prop 50 in California, and in order to drive attention to that, he started to mimic Donald Trump's tweeting style in this all caps manner, and it drove attention to Prop 50. Mayor Zohran Mamdani is able to drive attention to his policies through these short, snappy videos. So not every Democratic congressional candidate or elected official has to be some sort of content creator, but we need communication that breaks through to the people. On top of that, we need to make sure we have clever ways of outmaneuvering the Republicans. We've seen this a few times, but I feel like overall, many of the Democrats in Congress, like we said, are still playing by the old rules. We have to make sure that we follow every single rule. And there's this quote, it's like, while Democrats, what's the quote? It's like, the past decade has been Democrats saying, but a dog can't play basketball while a dog just repeatedly dunks on us over and over and over. It's like, we can't be playing by these rules. We need a roadmap in order to restore our democracy. How about we start really, really viciously fighting for an anti-corruption campaign, an anti-corruption message? Why don't we right now try to write a bill that we propose to ban congressional stock trading, to limit the amount that corporations can invest and donate into campaigns, and then to maybe restore some of the clauses in the Constitution that Donald Trump has stepped on, like the Emoluments Clause. I mean, all of these things would restore faith to the American people, and then they message about it aggressively. But none of that's really happening, it feels like.
Better yet, introduce it as a constitutional amendment and have Republicans vote against it. Say, yep. If you guys really want to say that money in our politics is so bad, put your vote where your mouth is and vote on it. And they'll vote against it. And we have to reestablish ourselves as the party of anti-corruption and be unquestionable in that. And that's why what we at Leaders We Deserve, we do it. We support young candidates who reject the influence of corporate PAC money. Because while there are Democrats out there that take that money, I want young people to see that there is at least a cohort of a new generation that properly represents them and not the same corporations and special interests that fund assholes like Scott Jennings that brought us here in the first place, right? I want them to see that. And I get criticized a lot for the work that we do to challenge older incumbents that we feel like are failing to meet the moment. We cannot risk losing the House because an 81-year-old could die in a red state and give that opportunity in a safe seat up to a Republican governor to determine when we get the House back or not. We cannot continue to have a geriatric party while we say democracy is on the line. If democracy really is on the line, you need to make some tough decisions and make sure that you are offering the best champions to fight back effectively against what the hell Trump is doing and what is going to long outlive him. And I don't believe that the same Democratic Party that saw Donald Trump get elected not just once, but twice, is the Democratic Party that's going to get us out of here. And while we need to go out there and defeat Republicans, we need to offer people something substantially better and show them how our party, we actively do everything in our power to fight to build a better government that actually works for the people at every level and does not work to constantly represent the Epstein class and the and the growing number of trillionaires that we fucking have in this country now. That is insane, right? The fact that the Supreme Court is saying right now, Adam, that you and I and Elon Musk theoretically have the same right to freedom of speech, except he gets to spend $1 trillion behind that is bullshit, right? That's like saying, well, we have the same right to a freedom of speech when it's just you and I with our own voices, and then Elon Musk has the fucking, you know, the sound system of a concert to go out there. And it's such bullshit. Young people know it's bullshit. Old people know it's bullshit. And the crazy thing to me is, I think the group that's most out of touch in DC with their generation isn't necessarily younger people that are in power, the few of them that there are. It's old people,
yep,
like Schumer, who are out of touch with their own generation. The people that are showing up at these No Kings protests, they are not super young. And I'm glad that they're showing up. And I wish that there were more young people there, but it's not. Like, I'm sure you've seen it yourself, Adam. It's not a crazy number of young people. It's because people are pissed off, and rightfully so, at Chuck Schumer and his leadership. And if we don't offer people something substantially new and show them how we are actually fighting for them, we're fucked. We are completely fucked if we don't massively change who we are as a Democratic Party. And the last thing I'll say in this rant is that I find myself in a really interesting position where I simultaneously am working on the outside to antagonize the system, but I also have to work on the inside with different allies at the same time. And a couple weeks, just a couple weeks ago, I remember this conversation that I was in with somebody from the Democratic establishment who was saying, you know, your candidates don't take corporate money. That's a big problem for us because we need to take corporate money. And I said, well, why do you need to take that money? And they said, well, it's because we need that money for ads. And I said, well, why do you think we need to spend so much money gaslighting voters into believing that we're for them as their lives continue to get worse and worse? Maybe don't you think if we didn't have to vote for such dog shit policies that are against our own constituents' own interests and the very values that we espouse as Democrats, that maybe we wouldn't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars gaslighting the fucking country into believing that we're for them as their lives continuously get worse?
Exactly. Very well said. And then these candidates take money from corporate PACs, which force them to take positions that are unpopular. And then therefore, the cycle continues where we lose. And then people, conservatives and older Democrats, wonder, you know, how come we have this insurgent part of the party, a part of the party that is coming from the outside and winning? When I talk to people like Scott Jennings, they reduce it to, oh, all these socialist kids in New York just want to vote for Zohran. But that is missing the forest for the trees. The reason why Zohran Mamdani won is because there is deep apathy among young people, among young voters, among people in New York City who feel like, you know, things haven't been working for them. And this apathy was translated into the Zohran Mamdani campaign. He basically went in and said, F that, I'm not going to take this corporate PAC money. I'm not going to be beholden to these special interest groups that want to change the way that I speak. He actually listened to New Yorkers. He had a platform and still has a platform that people gravitate to and really, really like. And that's basically it. I think that when a lot of young people...
Wait, hold on, Adam. You mean to tell me that when we actually offer something better to voters and say to them, hey, I'm not owned by anybody, I'm here to represent you, you can actually get more people to turn out and vote for you, even if you're massively outspent? That's crazy. You mean to tell me that maybe democracy can work sometimes, right? It's such bullshit, man.
Have you considered that we could find a candidate on the brink of death and maybe elect them and throw them into office?
Well, and maybe we can get tens of millions of dollars from AIPAC and all the other groups that are out there and corporations out there to make sure that we can keep them in power literally until they die, to the point that they're so unable to lead, they aren't even fucking voting in their own elections.
And then because of the AIPAC donations, they're forced to take increasingly unpopular positions on things like Israel, and they refuse to call out the West Bank settlements or the starvation happening in Gaza right now. And instead, they're more focused on helping out the special interest groups that elected them. Like, you can see the footsteps as to why the system is so broken. You can see the fingerprints on special interest groups and the way that candidates operate. And then you can see the lack of special interest groups in the younger candidates. I interviewed Abdul Al-Sayed recently. I don't know if you work with him or if you talk to him.
He's awesome.
He's, dude, genuinely, speaking to somebody who just spoke like a
great
normal
guy,
human being.
Ripped.
He's ripped. I didn't want to say it first. He's ripped. He wore this black shirt.
And I'm sure Donald Trump will have a comment about that at some point, you know, talking about how handsome he is and then says something horrifically Islamophobic after that.
Yeah, I fell in love with him in a hotel room, which he said about the Egyptian president recently.
Jesus
and then he said some crazy shit. But either way, Abdul is a really good example of somebody who can speak to voters. And he just called out Elon Musk directly. It feels like a lot of these Democrats want to tiptoe around it. But he said, listen, in different words, he was like, listen, Elon Musk is using his vast wealth to buy this platform, and then rig our elections. There needs to be a wealth tax on people like this. But you know what? Like, most Democrats have very, very, like, this is a really good example, actually. Let me give you a really good example. A lot of people always ask, why is the housing problem so hard to fix? Why is the housing problem so incredibly hard to fix when everybody seems to want cheaper housing? Well, it's because the voter base that currently votes the most and is in power in any district is going to be older people who own homes and who have lived there for a while. So naturally, they have the most incentive to vote. They have the most incentive to make sure that their housing prices don't lower by there being different bills. We also have a realtors lobby. We have a housing lobby. We have lobbies that are then donating to the politicians. And this creates an incentive for politicians to not rewire the housing system. So what you do very brilliantly is try to get young people engaged, running, and voting so that we can rewire this fundamental flaw and create the incentive for politicians to actually do this in the first place. Because what incentive does a politician have to like help healthcare costs when the pharmaceutical lobby is in their ear? What incentive do they have to talk about West Bank settlements when AIPAC is in their ear? We need to rewire all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that starts out with reforming our campaign finance system, but it starts out with giving the American people, and especially young people that have lost so much faith in our democracy, people to vote for, that we need to take these corporations and special interests' biggest asset, which is their money, and make it their biggest liability, the same way we did in 2018 with the NRA. And their support of different politicians after the Parkland shooting, where the Democratic Party back in 2018 was like, you know, we just have to accept the NRA as they are. They're undefeatable. They're a juggernaut. And just continue with this ridiculously weak behavior instead of being like, no, actually, maybe we should stand up for the kids that are getting fucking killed in their schools and tell the NRA to go fuck themselves. And that's what the sad thing about that is, what it took was a group of high schoolers going out there with parents who lost children to gun violence to force the party to actually be courageous on that and do the right thing. We should be a party that doesn't have to be forced to do the right thing. We should be a party that does the right thing to begin with. And we need to make, like, what I really worry about more than anything is, you know, I got to ask this question the other day in an interview, where somebody was like, you know, what do you think about Luigi Mangione? You know, he's celebrated by a lot of, you know, left-wing people of your generation because, like, they are disgusted by the insurance lobby and everything. And of course, like, I'm not going to support an act of gun violence, obviously. I've seen the horrific effects that has on a community. But what I said is, like, if we don't start to make our political system actually work and properly represent people, people are going to find alternative ways of trying to fix these problems without democracy. And that's really what scares me, is if we don't really start making people believe that the system can be changed, if they do get out there and vote, that there are people that can properly represent them, they're going to start to engage in violence. They're going to engage in anti-democratic behavior. And it's going to lay very fertile ground for somebody that would want to say, similar to Donald Trump once again, like, hey, you know, this whole democracy thing is broken, it's corrupt. And they're right, it is broken, it is corrupt because of people like Elon Musk, the Koch brothers and others. But then say, I'm the only one that can fix it, just give me all the power, I alone can fix it. And then all of a sudden we're in a dictatorship. That is what I really fear, and why we do the work that we do at Leaders We Deserve, to take support from hundreds of thousands of people around the country and give that support directly to candidates in the form of advice on a day-to-day basis so that they, you know, avoid costly and expensive mistakes early on in their campaigns, and then give them substantial funding so that they can get across the finish line. And it's working. This cycle, we've already, out of 20 races that we've had, we've now won 15 of them already. And that is at the state legislative level mostly, but it's also people like Christian Menefee who are out there that just signed on to Block the Bombs that also went out there and have already have started grilling the head, one of the main people at the EPA for the Trump administration, who had done that work as a county attorney, taking on corporations and special interests that were price gouging the wake of hurricanes, or were polluting communities with carcinogenic air pollution because of different rail yards out there. That's what we're trying to do.
Very well said. Yeah. And like what you're saying is that when democracy is not responsive to people, people begin to feel an angst that can be taken advantage of, weaponized by bad faith actors.
Yes.
A really good example of this is actually Doge with Elon Musk. People were feeling like the government wasn't working for them, which it's not. People were feeling like the government was inefficient. So Elon Musk weaponized that inefficiency and promised to make it more efficient for the average person. What do you know? He gets into power and starts to rewire the institutions and the contracts to all benefit him, benefit his rich friends, benefit Donald Trump and the Epstein class, as you pointed out earlier. So when democracy isn't responsive, that does open a door. And it's never going to be like a perfect, perfect, pure democracy, but we can have a democracy that's not completely hijacked by special interest groups. And I'm glad that you're doing the work to focus on that. You know who's pulling us away from that actively? Are these right-wing pundits all over TV lying about this war day after day after day? I feel like people like our age and even millennials have been primed to grow up in an era where we see the United States in the Middle East and we see the president at the time cheering that the United States is winning, like when Saddam Hussein died, or when we invaded Iraq or Afghanistan, or all these times, the United States president and the people who were in power were saying that we are winning, we are winning. You and I know, as many young people know, that just because we're in the Middle East does not mean that there is any actual benefit to our life. Just because we killed a bad guy or destroyed part of their military does not mean that it benefits us in any way, especially if you can't get actual political concessions. So with Iraq and Afghanistan, these victories that they claim turned into years and years of a grinding counterinsurgency that cost us trillions of dollars and was catastrophic. We're now seeing something similar with Iran, where just because the president's saying we destroyed their navy, we took out Khamenei, that doesn't mean there's actual substantial benefits for us. In fact, we've gotten zero political concessions from Iran whatsoever. And this most recent memorandum of understanding, which is what they're calling it, is basically just a reversion back to the beginning of the war when the strait was open, except Iran wants to toll it now, which is worse. We are responsible for getting together $300 billion from Gulf countries that Iran was just striking at because of us. And now these Gulf countries have to give that money to Iran. So it's an absolute mess. And we could talk a bit about Jennings as well, because this guy is still lying about this on TV every single day. That's what bothers me. These Republicans are not bound to any rules, both in office and on TV. They're not bound by the truth. They're not bound by timelines. They're not bound by any reality. And right when they get proven wrong, they just move their lie. So when people like you and I go on the TV and we say, listen, we're not going to play this game where they can just lie and then we all move on and go to the next segment, they get so incredibly mad. The fragility of these right-wing pundits, they haven't been pushed back on in this manner, and they're not ready for the up-and-coming generation.
No. They're not. And that's why they have the audacity. I mean, just the fact that Scott Jennings is, I remember being on CNN the day before Zohran was elected, and we were actually Zohran's largest organizational funder in that primary. We spent $300,000 in support of him. And I remember being on CNN the night before talking about his race. And I remember Scott Jennings talking about the price of eggs and how he, as a humble chicken farmer, he understands the price of eggs and that the affordability crisis is really not that bad. And I remember looking over at him as he's saying this. I'm like, is that guy wearing a fucking Rolex as he's saying this? And then I was like, Scott, you know why Zohran is going to win tomorrow? It's because people are, to your point, Adam, people are sick and tired of listening to men with fucking Rolexes lecture them about what is and is not affordability on fucking CNN. And then we went and crushed him. He didn't even say a word to me afterwards. He literally walked off and would not even talk to me. It was incredible. But
he knows he got caught.
The thing that really pisses me off about him is it's not, he doesn't even engage in good faith. It's, his strategy is literally, let me bring up as many non-sequiturs as possible and just overwhelm you by bringing up various random points and be very well studied in one specific random thing that nobody in their right mind would ever know that much about in any scenario, and then act like he knows everything as a result of that. It's like, no, you know, you don't need to be a genius to understand that for more foreign intervention in Iran, that is the very reason why the regime is there in the first place, because of a fucking MI6 and CIA-backed coup that happened in Iran, yeah, that then there was a counter-revolution to, probably is not going to fucking fix this problem.
Yep, that was such a zinger. I honestly thought you had that written beforehand, but knowing that you came up with that on the spot, that's even better. That makes
it's
the moment
and debate. I was well trained.
Very good stuff. I mean, my moment was when I was like, we don't want to listen to the same people defending a war with a country that starts with IRA. And I was pointing out how he worked in the Bush administration, basically, and was defending the Iraq war. And he flipped the hell out on me. And people always ask me, like, was he being performative? Was he actually mad? The reality is, week after week after week, I would go on the show and I would see him get increasingly more stressed as the 4 to 6 week timeline then turned to 7 weeks, then 8 weeks. Then I could see this guy deflate it. He was starting to get a little bit more weird and dodgy. He very clearly didn't like the way that I pressed him in the same way that he doesn't like the way you pressed him. And then eventually he just felt backed into a corner by the fact that he took a shitty position. This actually taught me a lot. No matter how many Democratic administrations I'm debating through and defending, never back yourself into a corner by taking a shitty position, because then you'll turn into Scott Jennings and you'll basically be a sad shell of a human being that's incredibly fragile and can't handle any pushback whatsoever. I mean, the guy's a shell of a person, honestly. Like, I don't know how you possibly tweet out, oh, Trump just got a deal with Iran, or Trump just got a deal. This was 2 months ago he tweeted this out. 1 month ago.
Well, I remember him telling me the last time I was on CNN with him that this is going to end in 2 weeks. And that was 2 months ago, right? The war that's not a war is still not a war. And by the way, we ended it, you know, 3 months ago. And by the way, we just ended it again. And meanwhile, the Israelis have not agreed to stop doing anything here.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves in the position where we now have, like, this is the cycle of Donald Trump's policy priorities. He creates a crisis because he can't actually lead. And then he fixes that crisis by conceding a whole bunch and then putting our country into a worse position, and then repeats that cycle over and over and over again, just to create as many distractions as possible from the real scandal here, which is the massive amount of corruption that is happening in this administration. This is a guy, I you know what I would love to see you do the next time that you're on CNN with Scott, is say to him, like, you think that international drug trafficking is so bad, we're going and bombing all these boats in the Caribbean still, with very little legal precedent or justification for doing that, except whatever the fuck the Pentagon can come up with. And our president just pardoned a guy that brought in $400 million,
yep,
of uncut cocaine,
yep, yep,
into the United States. Okay, so our president literally just pardoned the head of a fucking cartel, pretty much. And you're supporting that. Our president just gave the Iranian government he's planning on giving the Iranian government $300 billion in exchange for nothing.
Yep.
And now we find ourselves as well in the position where he's also pardoned CZ, the cryptocurrency billionaire,
yeah. Yeah.
Who literally was helping to launder money for fucking Hamas. And the company knew that. And he fucking pardoned it. Could you imagine how AIPAC would react,
bro,
if Barack Obama pardoned a guy that was laundering money for fucking Hamas?
It would be over. I mean, like they were joking about the tam suit at that event. Imagine if he did any of this. You know, really quickly, add on to Shengpeng Zhao, CZ. This guy also helped the Trump family build World Liberty Financial and then facilitated a $2 billion investment from the United Arab Emirates in exchange, yep, for chips that China really wants. So Trump is, yep, just selling our country directly to other countries.
Yes, and guess what? Like, Democrats are going to be left once again with picking up the pieces and rebuilding it, and Republicans are there. We have to actually hold them accountable. That's the other thing. Like, we need to. I want to see on day one, what are the subpoenas that we're going to do? And if the DOJ doesn't enforce those subpoenas, we need to use the sergeant at fucking arms to go out and haul these people's asses in front of Congress and fucking grill them,
yep,
for the murder of Renee Good and Alex Preddy, and the detention of tens of hundreds of thousands of people that did nothing wrong in terms of criminal liabilities except overstaying their visas in this country.
I think that's a really good place to end it. I think that accountability is something that people in the Democratic Party are really, really yearning for. Some sort of enforcement mechanism for all of the laws on our books that seem to just be unspoken, spoken norms now. Like Donald Trump has taught all of us that many of the norms we thought were legit are just unspoken. He's tearing through those, tearing through the actual rule of law. And all people want, especially young people, is a strong Democratic Party that is clever, can cleverly punch back, and can message in a manner that resonates with people, which we talked a little bit about, this aggressive messaging, this aggressive pushback, and the rejection of corporate influence. So I think that for all the people in the audience who have had sort of a grim, you know, year and a half, it's been sort of rough for all of us as we've been following this. Just know that there are people like David, there are people like my team and I, the team around David.
People like Adam dog walking Scott Jennings every day.
Yeah. And really just the teams around us too. Like, I'm sure you have a really brilliant team around you. And I'm so grateful for my team that allows me to do this every single day. My team is full of a bunch of, you know, young folks that I've met over the years. So just know in chat, we are going to continue to fight for a better America. We are going to continue to fight for institutions that allow us to all exist in social harmony without corporate money tainting that, distorting that, like poisoning that. So thank you for all the work you do. And let's do this more often, for real.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to support our work at Leaders We Deserve, because we don't take corporate money, we rely on small dollar donors. And you guys can just look up Leaders We Deserve on our website and donate monthly, hopefully, because that's really what helps us get through, just chipping $5 or $10 a month. And thanks so much for making this possible and making time and leaving Barack Obama early for this.
Oh, it was worth it. It was a good chat. We'll chat again soon, David.
Yep. See ya.
Peace out.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.